I am potentially, we'll see if I actually go through with it, going skiing for the first time this weekend. So I still do try to make fun, time for some fun.
That's so exciting. Where are you going?
I'm going to, I think, Okemo in Vermont. So we'll see how that goes. I think that I'm in a group lesson with probably primarily children because I'm not particularly coordinated, but I think it'll be a fun time.
On today's episode of Doctors in Business, our guest is Dr. Reid Waldman. Dr. Waldman is the founder and CEO of Veradermics, a medical dermatology company based in New Haven, Connecticut. Their two main products are their treatments for common warts and pattern hair loss, which are in phase two of clinical trial. Welcome to the pod, Dr. Waldman.
Hey, it's a pleasure to meet you, David, and I really appreciate you having me here today.
Of course. So besides what I just mentioned, could you tell us a little more about yourself and Veradermics?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a board certified dermatologist by background, and I co-founded Veradermics in 2019. And, you know, the motivation for founding the company was the idea that there are many conditions that we see on a nearly daily basis in dermatology clinical practice for which there has been no meaningful innovation in decades, and there's very little innovation on the horizon. So we set out with the mindset that we would leverage our end user knowledge as physicians to identify therapeutics that address real treatment needs within the specialty. And you know, over the last 4.5 years, I think we've done just that. We've grown the company into being really the late stage innovator in aesthetics and dermatology. As you mentioned, we have assets in pattern hair loss and common warts. We also have earlier stage assets for alopecia areata, atopic dermatitis, and molluscum contagiosum. Prior to founding Veradermics, I was a board certified dermatologist, and my background is in clinical research and development, having served as an investigator on multiple phase two studies prior to this.
Awesome. So you started Veradermics while in residency. And you've mentioned in the past that you met your co-founder at a dermatology conference. So what was the timeline like since that conference until the start of like initial round of funding?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So we met at Hacking Dermatology, and the way that Hacking Dermatology worked is that over a weekend, we put together a 3-minute pitch, and that pitch gave the basis of the problem, which at the time was common warts, the solution, which is our immunostimulatory dissolvable microarray, and the business case related to the development of this type of pharmaceutical. We then were challenged, after winning Hacking Dermatology and getting some kind of seed grant funding, to refine the pitch and build the business over the next 5 months, at which point we pitched to a group of leaders in the pharmaceutical industry once again. And we spent that first 5 months really delving into the story of Veradermics, right? Understanding the problem in greater detail, understanding what it would really take to build this solution that at that time was just, an idea on a whiteboard, and refining, the commercial viability and business case. And so that 5-month period passed. We pitched yet again to the finals of Hacking Dermatology and were the grand prize winner. After that, there was roughly a 8-month period during which we went out and raised a seed financing, during which we closed about $2 million in capital, primarily from dermatologists who connected, with the indication.
Gotcha. And so far, you've raised around $40 million, which is amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, and it's been an incredible journey, raising capital. And I think the thing that I find most fascinating about it is that, you take all of these meetings and there's so much planning that goes into raising capital. But at the end of the day for us, the way we met the lead investor in our Series A was serendipitous. I had been interviewing for private practice dermatology jobs, and the owner of one of these practices says, "Hey, I think I know someone who you should talk to who's also a physician, who also does something that sounds similar to what you're doing." And that person was Vlad Koric, the CEO of Biohaven. And we connected, he mentored us, and really set us on the trajectory to raise that initial capital.
So you've mentioned that Veradermics targets under-innovated markets. And does that mean their innovation has been difficult in those markets, or just that few have attempted to recently?
So I think that it's a combination of the two. When we think about the dermatology landscape, for decades, the majority of drug development in dermatology was not particularly innovative. You know, individuals would take something that was a cream, they'd turn it into an ointment, something that was a gel, they'd turn it into a lotion, they'd take one acne ingredient and combine it with another. And that was an extremely lucrative, you know, form of drug development for decades. Then in the mid, 2017, 2018 period of time, the insurers really fought back against that type of development, and that market disappeared. More recently, we are seeing innovative development within dermatology, and I think the great example of an under-innovated market that had change is vitiligo. Right? Vitiligo is an autoimmune pigmentary condition, and we recently had the first approved prescription product for vitiligo, which is Opzelura from Incyte. And, you know, that's a drug where, you know, the therapeutic index is not tremendous, right? It's like a number needed to treat a five for twice daily application for 6 months for someone to repigment their skin. And nonetheless, that drug is going to do hundreds of millions of dollars in sales, in its first several years on the market. And I think it speaks to the idea that there are these conditions where there are extremely motivated patient populations, and a therapeutic and the hope that is associated with it has the ability to really, you know, build a great commercial market, even if that market has never existed previously.
Yeah, and I think it's for those reasons exactly, I think it's really important for physician entrepreneurs to be more common, because you guys have that customer experience. Even though you guys aren't patients, you're providing the treatment and prescribing the medication. So,
yeah, and I think in dermatology in particular, that's extremely important in that, you know, dermatology as a specialty is not particularly guideline driven. There's a lot of latitude that is given to prescribers, primarily because we don't have a lot of approved therapeutics within the field. And so when we take our problem-centric approach to drug development and drug selection, what we think about are problems that are large enough to motivate a prescribing change. And I think that's a very different mindset than that, of typical pharma. So for example, you know, when we talk about hair loss, people often point to, you know, Rogaine as being FDA approved in both men and women and ask, well, where does that fall short? Well, when we think about Rogaine, we think about a product that someone has to put on their scalp twice a day for the rest of their life. And we know that that route of administration is simply not what the consumer base, you know, what the patient population is interested in. You know, people are interested in oral therapeutic, and so that's where we develop. We know that people aren't interested in hormonal therapeutics because they're concerned about things like erectile dysfunction, like fertility, like sex drive. And so we intentionally are developing a therapeutic that's non-hormonal.
That's awesome. And you could have had a very successful career as a dermatologist, but by starting a business, you're risking a lot. So what led you to believe and have faith that this idea of a dermatology company will be successful?
So I am a firm believer in the company and our outlook, and I think it's going to be a tremendous transformative company for aesthetics, dermatology, and infectious disease. And I think people often bring that up, which is that, you know, dermatology is very stable in its practice. And I went to something that is inherently a risk-laden industry. And I do it because I really enjoy it. And I think the impact that I can have is much greater. You know, our team is working tirelessly to bring therapeutic solutions to millions of people. And that impact so outstrips the impact I can have as a single physician. And that's where I get a lot of the day-to-day motivation, the day-to-day excitement. And I will tell you, you know, we're working hard here, but we're having a lot of fun doing it. And I've never once regretted it, and I can't imagine doing anything else.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, a lot of successful entrepreneurs say that they wouldn't do it all over again because it's been so stressful and they face a lot of challenges, but that's great for you.
Yeah, no, I definitely appreciate why people might feel that way. And it is certainly a lot of work, but it is that hard work that is what makes it rewarding. And I think my favorite part of this endeavor is that there are plans that we laid out, you know, visions that we had 4+ years ago, and we've watched them come to fruition with careful planning and careful execution over years. That sort of goal setting and goal achievement is really not achievable outside of this type of venture. And it's just so fun. It makes every day a special day.
Awesome. So what's the most important goal for Veradermics right now?
So for us right now, the value of the company is really tied to clinical development. So there are these clear clinical development milestones that have, you know, objective de-risk to the programs. And it is the clinical data and positive clinical data associated with clinical development from which we derive value. So at this point in time, we have, you know, several programs that are either dosing in clinical studies currently or that are about to start dosing in clinical studies. And executing on that is really the critical element for the business.
And you've mentioned that you leverage your expertise in the past designing and conducting clinical trials to grow the company. So what strategies have you been implementing to create successful clinical trials and accelerate them?
So I think the first is about clinical trial design and strategy. And, you know, I think one of the things that puts us in a really special position is having that clinical understanding of what matters and what doesn't when it comes to inclusion and exclusion of certain patient populations, you know, where risk lies, because our primary goal is always to maintain patient safety in studies. The second element there is, you know, in clinical execution. I had the great privilege of being an investigator for numerous phase two and phase three trials prior to founding the company. And it was that experience that showed me what things are like at the ground level on the sites. You know, for some of our studies, there are, you know, more than 40 sites that are participating in these studies. They have, you know, combined hundreds of staff members working on these studies. And I've been one of those staff members. And so I think it gives me a great appreciation for the feasibility of execution at the site level. I think the final thing is, you know, what do we do to make trials go faster, right? Every day that we don't finish a clinical trial is a day that we don't have a product in the hands of people who want that product. So it's very important, you know, that we move with speed. You know, every day is huge in pharma. The way that we accelerate is the same way we accelerate through the entirety of our business, which is that we're always, you know, pushing timelines. If someone says we need 30 sites, we evaluate, well, why not 40? Why not 50? And we always take the mindset to compress timelines, you know, as much as possible, as long as we're not sacrificing any quality assurance there.
Yeah, and I also expect it to be more difficult for a smaller firm that's not a large hospital system to be collecting clinical data from all over the country. So along those lines, what has been the most difficult and challenging problems that you had to face as CEO?
I think the most stressful part of the business at this point, which is true of any emerging growth company, is that there is a constant need to innovate and to grow, right? Stagnation is what kills for an emerging growth company. And so even when we're doing a tremendous job and we're proud of the work we're doing, we always have to be evaluating what the next phase will require. We have to be forward-looking 3, 6, 9 months, a year later. What is the team going to need? You know, right now we spent our all hands meeting this morning discussing personnel and how, you know, the clinical trials that we're about to begin, the financial strategy that we're employing, that is going to require that we, you know, grow the team further. It's going to require that we change the way we approach certain elements of the business. And it is that constant change and the need to evaluate change that is, I think, the biggest stressor, the biggest challenge to running a startup, because as soon as you stop changing, then you're certainly not keeping up with the explosive growth you need for a company like this.
Certainly. And you're obviously an expert in medical knowledge and dermatology. So where were you able to learn these business skills and knowledge necessary to be a CEO?
So it's funny because, and I think I've said this elsewhere, but you know, I really think my natural calling was in a career in, you know, in finance, that, you know, private equity or the like is probably what my skill set best translates to. But I was a high schooler during the Great Recession in an area of the country that was hit particularly hard. And my father is a physician. And so I saw the stability there. And I think it caused me to gravitate towards that stability. You know, nonetheless, I've always had a keen interest in this type of area. And, you know, since running the company, it's been a lot of learning on the job, a lot of taking the time to evaluate what really matters for the business and to identify thought partners who have been there, who have done that, who are experts in, you know, the elements of the business in which I'm not an expert, and understand from them what is it that needs to be done in this stage of the business to excel. And so we've been very fortunate to have, you know, either hired people or to have advisors that have a myriad of knowledge that has been just tremendously impactful on the business.
Yeah, and you've mentioned earlier that at the conference, those business-minded people have also gave you a lot of advice in initially starting up the company. So I think it's important to have the right mentors for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we look at the last year, we had been very fortunate to have the former chief financial officer of Rally Bio, former chief tax officer of Alexion, Jeff Fryer, as one of our, you know, critical advisors. And Jeff has really, you know, taken me under his wing as a CPA with extensive pharmaceutical experience to hone in on financial strategy, you know, for an emerging biotech company like ours. And so it's partners like that that are indispensable, in that there's no reason to go at any of this alone. You know, people are willing to help. There are smart people out there, and we've been a great benefactor of many of them, like Jeff.
Yeah, and it's not like you have time now to get an MBA or something, so.
It's funny you say that. I did take the GMAT in the very early days of the company, but yeah, there's no way I could go back to school at this point.
Yeah, so on the contrary to Veradermic School, what are some of your personal goals, maybe related or unrelated to your career?
So it's interesting, you know, right now the focus is on creating shareholder value, on executing on the company's vision and on delivering these drugs to the market. So, you know, the majority of what I do, you know, centers around bringing the company to its next stage. You know, in terms of my, you know, personal goals, my personal goal with the venture is that we create therapeutics that enable a meaningful change in the way people think about the conditions that we're treating, right? My hope is that what we're doing has an actual impact on actual people's lives. And, you know, I take a lot of pride in the work that we do because I think that that is going to be the outcome. In my personal life, you know, I still try to maintain fun. I definitely love to travel. I love to go out to dinner. And I am potentially, we'll see if I actually go through with it, going skiing for the first time this weekend. So I still do try to make fun, time for some fun.
That's so exciting. Where are you going?
I'm going to, I think, Okemo in Vermont. So we'll see how that goes. I think that I'm in a group lesson with probably primarily children, because I'm not particularly coordinated, but I think it'll be a fun time.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Forbes 30 Under 30 is a great recognition for the work you've been accomplishing at Veradermics. Congratulations. But wrapping up, what would you like to say to our listeners who are maybe thinking about starting a business or maybe even a club in college?
I think the biggest piece of advice that I can give, and this goes back to the discussion you and I had on the importance of thought partners, is that, you know, there is no reason to go at any large venture alone. There are people who are willing to help you, who have tremendous expertise. There is no expectation from anyone that you know everything about everything. There is an expectation that you build a team of tremendous individuals around you that elevate you and that help you achieve a common vision. And when I think about the things that I'm happiest about that we've done over the last quarter, It's that we've made tremendous additions to our team. You know, I'm at our office right now. Right next to me is our director of clinical operations, you know, Barb Samazic. She has a completely different skill set than I have. She has completely different experience, you know, in big pharma at Pfizer and BMS. We hired Dominic Carano, who has SEC compliance experience, something that, you know, I have no knowledge about, you know, that I have no direct experience with. We hired Brian Troutman, who is the king of process, and, you know, his skill set differs tremendously from what I do. And I think that the biggest advice I would give to anyone is always be excited to identify people who are smarter than you are, who have skill sets that are different than yours, and who are additive to achieving a shared vision.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Waldman.
Of course, David, and good luck with finishing up at Penn, and thank you for having me on the podcast.
If you like what you're hearing, don't forget to subscribe, tell a friend, leave a review. We would love to hear from you.